5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Model Moon!
The dark side of the Hoddle Moon. Immutably amazing crypto wisdom. On today's episode, we talk to crypto superstar Lindsay Ju. We talk about how she went from Silicon Valley to Seoul and fintech to blockchain tech. We talk about some exciting projects, hear what she's excited about, and ask her what it's like to be a woman in the crypto space. Hold on to your private keys. You are now orbiting the dark side of the Hoddle Moon.
Copy. This show is proudly sponsored by Salamantech's point-of-sale devices and software. Tired of all the headaches dealing with cryptocurrency? You don't know what a private key is? You don't want to deal with exchanges? Well, if you're a business and you just want to run your business without thinking about cryptocurrency headaches, look no further than Salamantech. We provide point-of-sale software that allows you to get paid in fiat currency, that's euros, allowing your customers to pay in cryptocurrency, that's BTC, ETH, and a host of others.
Stand by.
Dark Side of the Hoddle Moon proudly uses the audio services of Eye the Sound. Beyond the amazing sound production, they've really been a sounding board, pun intended, for our show, giving us great customer support and constructive criticism and feedback. So if you want a little bit more personalized attention you're not going to get from a bigger provider, check out iThesound.com.
Hoddle Moon!
All right, Josh, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Kate. I'm in the great state of Jeju, meeting the governor, talking crypto. How are you doing?
I'm in Rhode Island. I just watched the Dave Chappelle show. Special is pretty awesome, and I'm on my third beer tonight, so I'm ready to go. And Josh, we have a special guest today, don't we?
We do indeed. We've got the most important of all people, very important person on the line, Lindsay Ju. What's up, Lindsay?
What's up, guys? Pleasure to be here, reporting in from Seoul. Thanks for having me.
Nice. Lindsay, for people that don't know you, although you're a crypto celebrity, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you're from, where you've lived, how you got into crypto?
Oh wow, the whole 411. Well, I wouldn't call myself a crypto celebrity, but I'm Lindsay Ju, and currently in the crypto sphere, I work with the CNBC Africa show Crypto Trader and Rand Nooner, so I help out on that show. And I'm also in Seoul, Korea, so crypto mecca, just doing a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit of marketing and biz dev with some different ventures. And let's see, what else did you ask? Where I'm from? Oh, where am I? Where am I really from?
Okay, how about this? Where'd you grow up?
Where did I grow up? So I grew up in the United States of America.
You want to be more specific? East Coast, West Coast, Alaska?
Could have been Nebraska.
I spent a few years in South Dakota, then right next to Canada in upstate New York, then North Carolina, and then most recently I was in the Bay Area working in tech. So I moved around the map a little bit. Yeah, Midwest to Northeast to South. This is my trek. And then I went from financial services to tech to then fintech, crypto, blockchain. So that was my career path.
Yeah, and Josh, you want to jump in here? How did you guys meet?
Oh, wow.
No, that's an interesting story.
Now, she is a Dan Lok university graduate. That's right. Right, Lindsay? So I was considering that. I was considering that course, and I was like, I knew people that she was working with through LinkedIn. So I saw that she was a Dan Lok university graduate. So I was like, I'm going to reach out to this lady and see what it's all about. Because if she's a graduate, maybe she can, you know, sell me on the phone or whatever. So we got on a phone call, I think it was at the end of last year. And I grilled you about, is it good? Is it worth the money? You're like, definitely, it's great. Should check it out. that's how we first got in contact. And then I think we met.
I haven't yet closed you on the course, but you've been busy. That's true. That's been your main excuse.
Yeah, that's been true. I've been doing a bunch of other stuff. But eventually I'll get around to doing the Dan Lok University course. And I'll use your affiliate link, that's for sure.
That's okay. I closed you on another job opportunity. So that was a interesting venture as well. But actually, speaking of that, on Monday, I'm heading up to Vancouver to go to the event with Dan Lok as well as Dan Pena. So I'm going to get a chance to see them in the flesh.
That's awesome. Hey, have you ever met Dan Pena before? Do you know his stuff?
I mean, I've seen The Billion Dollar Man, but I haven't seen The Billion Dollar Man. So I'm looking forward to seeing him in the flesh.
I'm a Dan
Pena. And hopefully not being blasted too hard.
I'm a Dan Pena fan. Like, I don't know as much about Dan Lok, but I would definitely take Dan Pena's course at the castle in Scotland.
The thing is, like, I think you're signing up for a hiding, basically. Like, it just destroys you for the first few days. Like, makes you evaluate your life and think, what the hell have I done to get myself in this situation? Right, I need to take responsibility 100%, cut out all negative influences, and go for your goals hard out. I mean, and then he gives away so much of his material on the internet that you could basically watch weeks and weeks of his content. But after about 2 hours, you just know that you're going to get nothing but abuse at that place, you know?
But then, I mean, watching the courses, like, how much have you applied? I think that's the difference between, like, being there in person with him and then just, like, watching his stuff online.
Yeah, it apparently makes you accountable.
Yeah, well,
that's worth every penny, right? If you're going to become a fraction of this billion dollar man.
Yeah, definitely. Indeed.
Well, there's a great segue into that. Maybe we'll go into that later. There's a service called Boss as a Service where you pay for accountability. So, you know, like accountability partners are becoming more popular these days. Well, essentially, mm-hmm. you can pay a whole bunch of money at the start of the year, and then you have this boss as a service company drill you every day, calling you up, annoying you to the point where you have to block them if you don't do the activity. And hey, you got to pay for the privilege, hey, too. So I think
Josh,
that's pretty cool.
Josh, you don't know this, but do you know there's a, what do you call it, like a boss service? What's the terminology?
Boss as a service.
I have a free boss as a service thing you can look into. It's called My Girlfriend.
I knew that's where he was going. Oh,
she's in the background.
Yeah, she's calling for you, Kane. She is calling for
she
you.
She heard that one.
I think she might have.
Uh-oh.
All right.
If the stream suddenly cuts out, we know that Kane's been whacked.
Yeah. Just business as usual.
But yeah, the dark side of the Hobble Moon shows will live on YouTube.
Yeah, that's true. You live on forever despite being assassinated on air.
All right, Lindsay. So how did you go from the US to Seoul? And how did you go from fintech to crypto?
Well, you know, what I found is that working in financial services, I didn't feel like I was meeting my potential. Certainly, there was a lot that I learned working in financial services about how banks really worked, what people were really doing on the inside. And then, but I wasn't really able to color outside of the lines, so to speak. And so I thought, well, maybe I can be more innovative and more creative if I work in tech. So then I worked in tech, but then I just found that what I was doing was just a repeated process every day. And it still wasn't the challenge that I was looking for. I did really enjoy working in a startup environment, though, versus a huge corporate structure. so then I was like, okay, let me just try something completely different. So I left my surroundings in Silicon Valley and I went out to Europe, traveled around to find myself, hung out with some other entrepreneurs. And then that's when I landed in Seoul. I landed in Seoul and the very first opportunity that I found that I qualified for was actually a ICO marketing job. ICO marketing job right near the U.S. Embassy that was run by another Korean adoptee, an American, and a Belgian guy. And they said, we're going to make this like, they really looked up to Steve Jobs. So they were like, if anybody, you know, survives here, you will live on. You could be, you know, like, let's say next Steve Wozniak. They consider themselves like the Steve Jobs. So it could be the Wozniak.
Okay, right on. So it's like you were in tech and you were looking for something more and maybe you found that in crypto. I know I found myself that. I kind of came to crypto from like, economic or philosophical background, but I do find it's very dynamic and it's changing a lot and there's a lot of opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say this just an ability to learn more every day. I think they also just meet people that believe anything is possible for better or worse. You know, that comes as a two-edged sword, but I find that the whole belief system and the entrepreneurial spirit very enticing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of promising projects, but there are definitely other projects that require a whole lot of belief.
Yeah, there's lots of faith required in some of them. Well, that's a great introduction to you and your background. So I think one of the first things that I'd love to get to know more about is the CNBC crypto trader role. Like, how do you get involved with those guys in the first place? How did you first meet them? And how did it evolve to the point where they asked you to be, you know, one of the main contributors to the show because you interview people all the time? So that story is pretty interesting. I'd love to hear more.
That's interesting because it's just, I think when you find yourself working with people in business, like, you know, why we're here now, right? We just connected. I met Josh. Josh introduced me to Cade. We clicked. We had a good time just chatting, whether it was about crypto or other things in life. And so that was the case when I met Adrian and he and I became friends and I saw him at Miami. North American Bitcoin Conference. And so we just kept in touch and I saw him again in Hong Kong and then I had an opportunity to help out with the show and we just clicked. I really like working with Ran as well. And they thought that I added a different element to the team. So, I also think that it really helps to be able to think on your feet and not be intimidated by other people. I mean, working in corporate America in the US for 10 years. I had a chance to, I was very fortunate to talk to a lot of, I guess it's higher ups in the bank and the financial system. And so I just found that if you could ask them about what they're working on or what they were interested in, you didn't have to know everything about banking by any means. And I certainly never did, much like I don't know everything about crypto or what's going on in blockchain, but I have an interest. And I think that the viewers can relate to that. So I suppose that's what they liked about what I added and that I just was willing to just jump in, work off the fly without much like coaching, just ready to just dive in and get my hands dirty.
That's cool. And how much of, you know, Dan Locke's course helped you in that type of thinking on your feet, that type of stuff?
How can you really quantify? Yeah, I think I use Dan Locke's course every day. I'm using it right now. You just don't know it. You didn't know that you'd been Dan Locked.
we just got locked, ladies and gentlemen, live on the show. Yeah, that's cool. That's really interesting. So you must have traveled to a bunch of conferences on not only their behalf, but, you know, with other clients that you've been representing. I know that we kind of collaborated on a project in Seoul for a couple of months, and then you started to work with Logos Capital. I don't know how much detail you can go into or not. So, you know, sure. By all means, you don't have to divulge things that you can't, but just share what you can about that. That'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I advise from Logos Capital, specifically from my seat here in Seoul, Korea. And then Silvio Pupo is also a friend of mine and colleague, and he is the CEO of Logos Capital. He is actually going to be arriving in Korea tomorrow. He's scheduled to arrive in Korea tomorrow by way of Japan. So that will be his first trip to blockchain Mecca. And so have some meetings set up for him and Logos, and they're specifically a green and impact venture fund. So they started out in traditional, both private equity and venture-backed capital. And then they also, now they flipped their model. So it was about like traditional and just like pure green projects. And now it's about 80% blockchain and 20% more traditional investments. So they have really seen the future of blockchain and also what they can do in Miami. So Silvio is a native of Miami, Florida, and really passionate about investing and promoting projects that are having an impact within Miami. I forget the exact acronym, but he's also the president of the Blockchain Association. I know that there are many chapters. I think it might be GBA, Global Blockchain Association, but he is at least the president of the Miami chapter. And so he's connected to a lot of blockchain folks internationally that really try and work hand in hand with government organizations so that they can have larger clout and more ability to really, be a financial structure that's viable for the future. So, I help them out in just forming partnerships, introducing them around Asia, as well as any news that I think they should be aware of coming their way.
That's cool. How long is he in town for? Because I'd love to show him some of the stuff we've got going on at Salamantex. That would be cool if he's got a few days next week.
Yeah, I wish he was in town longer. I think he's leaving on Tuesday. I just sent him a WhatsApp message, so he's supposed to get back to me whether he's going to be flying out on Monday or Tuesday. But if we can set that up, sure will.
Interesting. Cool. And if he's interested in HODL investing, I'm willing to do a conference call with him for sure.
I will let him know.
All right, go on then, Kate. You have the next question.
Obviously. All right. Lindsay, I was looking on your channel. I'm a big fan. And I saw that you were recently in Colombia and you talked to some of the Dash guys and talked about how crypto's being used in Venezuela and maybe two or three other countries there. Can you talk a little bit more about that? And if you thought it was interesting, exciting, different, what you found when you were there on the ground?
Yeah, so I was there as a part of a collaboration with La Conexión. So helping Latin America spread their efforts, I'm definitely very passionate about that because I think it's coming at it from a completely different angle than what we see in Asia, Europe, and the US. I mean, these folks that I talked to in Latin America, they're using crypto on a daily basis and they're using it for their livelihood. Whereas people that I talk to in the Western and Northern hemisphere, they're using it for investment. utilities and some might be using as securities. So it's a much different mindset because crypto is enabling them to do daily tasks. And I'm just not seeing that the same way in Asia or in North America. So it was fascinating because, oh man, how did I get connected with Law Connection? I don't actually saw one of my YouTube videos. So funny, I actually studied Spanish in university. That was my second major was Spanish language. And I didn't know if I was ever going to use it, but I did a video in Spanish. And I think, I think that's how we got connected. Or if it was a friend of a friend, and they just heard that I was really passionate about Latin America and that I really believe in the efforts that are going on there and that it's going to just continue to explode and grow. So I went down to, it happened right after Consensus New York. I went down to Colombia. I was invited to go on behalf of the conference that was happening. And so I spoke about what I'm seeing in Korea and what the trends seem to be. And it was really different approach than what they were seeing. So they were fascinated. I hadn't even really heard about the kimchi premium. So I was educating them on the kimchi premium. And they just asked really like philosophical questions that I hadn't heard before. So it was a very engaging group. And it was, everybody was like taking notes. It wasn't, in Korea, when I go to events, I can never tell people are bored out of their minds or intently listening because you get the exact same reaction. And then you don't know until like afterwards that they come up and they like want to take a picture with you and you're like, maybe they were interested. I'm not sure. But they're like, everybody's doing like handwritten notes. So, it was really cool. So then, there was a 2-day conference and I met people from Venezuela. And so they had this booth of, what is it called? The Bolivar, the currency, the fiat currency. It was folded up into things like bags. So they were like, well, at least it's doing something because it's not worth anything, you know? And so they would just be like millions of Bolivar dollars.
Yeah. I mean, before they were, it was worthless. I mean, they were weighing it. They wouldn't even count it. They'd be like, oh, this is like an ounce. So this is about so-and-so amount of money. I actually know some Venezuelan expats myself, and maybe one or two will be future interviewees because, yeah, I mean, in the U.S. and Europe and maybe Asia, there's not as much of a use case now, but in a hyperinflated economy like Venezuela, people need it. And like you said, it's between life and death. People are using Dash and BCH to remit money to Venezuela or to buy like basic things like food and medicine.
Exactly. Exactly. So they were really educating people on the, you know, the preciousness of being able to remit Bitcoin and how that was keeping people's livelihood afloat. And so I saw that. And then Dash also was setting up vendors because, you know, these small vendors, I mean, one was like empanada, an empanada restaurant. And so like they were able to accept Dash for empanadas. And it's just, complete use case right there is to just see how these vendors were attracting new business because they were accepting crypto. I mean, I think that that's something that I saw both in like South Africa, Korea, from some of my blogger friends that were only using crypto. They said that like they research online, like where would accept crypto, but then they go in and they're like, oh yeah, we do accept crypto, but We haven't had anybody ask about that for like weeks.
Yeah, that was my experience actually in the U.S. is like I actually made a special trip to Portsmouth, New Hampshire to try and like use Bitcoin Cash and Dash to go to a couple cafes and bars. And I had mixed success. A couple of the places, it's like the staff didn't know how to use it or they only accepted one cryptocurrency and not the other. I mean, here you got to be like super passionate, at least in the U.S., to even try and use it. But in other places, it's like a necessity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Especially if you don't have some kind of card, like Cardano has like a card, which I guess collaborates with like Visa. So, you know, without that, you can just be really strapped. Starbucks accepts crypto now too. But let's see, what else did I see? Yeah, so that was a couple months ago, but I just had such a great time. Everyone was incredibly welcoming. And then I also want to give them a shout out because in the end of September, La Conexión is going to have another big crypto event in Argentina. And I know Binance is going to go down there. They've been in really big support of getting things set up in Argentina. And I believe that's going to be in Buenos Aires.
Oh, that's awesome.
Look for that event in September, kind of competing against Korea Blockchain Week. But since it's so geographically distance apart, I think that they'll both have a good turnout.
Yeah, well, nice. Well, for Lindsay, who I didn't know was a Spanish speaker, and our Spanish listeners, I just want to say that I'm mucho loco for crypto.
Que bien, que bien.
Oh, man. I only know, like, such a little bit of Spanish.
All right. Josh, maybe you
Viva la Bitcoin, would that work?
Oh, yeah. Viva la Bitcoin. Right.
Josh, do you want to add anything to South American crypto, or do you want to transition to something else?
Well, you know, I'm very curious about South America. That's actually the one part of the world I've yet to visit. You know, I've been to North America, obviously from Europe, from the UK, been to Africa. Spent most of my time in Asia, though. I love Asia, but I have never been, you know, to South America. And I think that...
Yeah, it says the man in islands in Jeju.
Yeah, so I've been to south of South Korea. But, you know, I would absolutely love to visit Latin America. I think it's a hot place. Apparently, people are really friendly. I'd need to learn Spanish, but apparently it's a lot easier to learn Spanish than it is to learn Korean. So I think that it shouldn't be too difficult. You just need to spend 6 months of studying intensely. Is that right?
I'd say so. Yeah, immerse yourself. But English to Spanish, I found to be incredibly easy. English to Korean. Yeah, I'd say both you and Kate have me beat there on the Hangukmaheo.
I go the K. Yeah, that is true. Korean can be quite...
I never dated, so apparently that's what people tell me my issue is. So,
oh well. Speaking of that, speaking of dating, I have to mention this. I'm a little bit disappointed. How didn't I get on your Hot or Not Crypto Guys list?
I will say that I had both my my staff, my virtual assistants, as well as a select group who shall not be named, nominate Hot or Not. So, yeah, that would be how. I know that a bunch of them pulled from crypto Twitter.
Okay. Well, if you do a 2020, you got to have the original HODL model blockade on there.
Okay, there's a vote for blockade.
All right, and to follow up on that, I don't know what your love life is like right now, but for you or just for women in general, would you recommend they date a no coiner, or do you think was that on your checklist of people to date? Do they have to have crypto, or is that not important?
Oof. I guess for anybody, it just depends on what your beliefs are. I mean, is financial education important to you? Is independent wealth important to you? Is freedom important to you? So, you know, if those things are important, then why wouldn't you be checking out blockchain? Why wouldn't you be checking out cryptocurrency? So, I'm not necessarily, let's say, a crypto digger, to where they have to, you know, I want to see like what their private keys are and see how.
Show me your private keys.
They're hodling. But I do like to, I mean, you know, when people, I think last talked to Snowden, he wasn't going to say if he owned crypto or not. So I believe in privacy. That's one of my core beliefs. So, you know, they don't have to prove to me that they own crypto. Let's say someone that I might potentially date, but the fact that they can have an intelligent conversation about crypto, what is crypto, what's going on. Yeah, that would be, I mean, I have to have an intelligent conversation with someone that I'm dating. That is a value of mine. I'm not sure
that's a good place to start. Yeah.
Okay. So crypto, maybe not, but it has to be intelligent conversation. They can't just say moon bangs, hodl to the moon, Lambos. It's got to be more than that.
It's got to be more than that. Absolutely. Absolutely. So you
don't need the private keys. You just want to see the public address. Just yeah. To verify.
If they have their either address, they can just hand that over. No.
Trust but verify. That's what we always say. So that's a good thing. Right, let's transition to a different topic, Cade. Actually, you know, this is a pretty impromptu thing. We only scheduled 30 minutes. We've already done 30 minutes. So
I've got a list of questions. I can go all day. This is my job.
Okay. Yeah, we can always do a speed round too.
Go ahead. Right. You've got some rapid fire stuff.
Here's a rapid fire one. You said you competed in martial arts. What discipline?
I competed in kung fu, karate, and then they had the category as traditional, so I could do either a traditional Korean pumse, or I could do a traditional Japanese kata. Back and forth between like Japanese Okinawan and, you know, pumse or taekwondo. So the very first martial art that I did when I was 7 was taekwondo. I competed in the National Black Belt League, and then when I was a teenager, I was ranked number 1 in the U.S. So
wow, number 1.
Okay, that's cool. Good. I did a little martial arts myself. I got an orange belt in Ishinru karate, and I also I'd say I've got a black belt in Hongdae street fighting.
Oh, I'm sure you do. Hongdae street fighting. Those, you might have aged out of the Hongdae streets, but it's a place to ride for sure.
And what about Josh's fighting background?
Oh, man, I've got a lot of street fights in my background, unfortunately. I've got like a lot of missing teeth because of that. I did judo when I was a kid, though. You know, I got an orange belt in judo and then I stopped. Because I started playing basketball, I became obsessed with basketball. So, yeah, I'm no stranger to the fight game, unfortunately. But that's why you know, you got to be able to hustle.
Okay, sometimes. Street Fighter. That's what you should rename the show. Huh?
All right, Lindsay, I want to know: have you ever had to use your kung fu or karate outside of competitions? Have you had to like karate chop anybody?
You know, it might be funny, but in all seriousness, as a woman who has traveled alone to multiple countries, I did find myself in positions where I was very thankful that I knew how to defend myself. I knew how to carry myself. I knew how to be aware of my surroundings.
That's true.
And there were times when, and I think this is a combination of factors of being a martial artist, of having strong parental figures in my life, where I just, you know, knew like what kind of precautions I had to take in order to keep myself safe. You know, whether that was not having another drink, whether that was like leaving the bar because I knew I was going to have to walk home by myself for a few kilometers. I mean, what have you. But yeah, I have traveled by myself to multiple countries, and I do like to socialize, and I go out, and you know, that can put yourself in particular situations. And I've also found that no doesn't necessarily mean no in every culture. So, you know, in all seriousness, and if there are, you know, people watching, I think that, it's just important to, you know, respect and communicate and listen, whether you're male, female, or other, it's still something that I think that humans struggle with. So,
yeah, definitely. I think, I'd say, you know, I've been all over the world. I've lived on three continents. I think most people are nice, but there's always that small minority that are going to make problems for everybody. And yeah, on a serious note, in Hongdae, I did get in a street fight because people were harassing my, at the time and still current girlfriend. And I had to kindly and compassionately body slam a few people. So.
Yeah, sometimes words, yeah. Words don't get through like sticks and stones.
So would you say it's really easy to tell the difference between like certain countries in terms of safety? Like, do you get a different vibe in different places? So I've heard that South America is quite a sketchy place, but people are so friendly. So that seems like a bit of a contradiction there. Whereas in South Korea, it's a super safe place, but strangers will completely ignore you. So it's like, That's a bit of an interesting one to, you know, navigate. Would you say that's true? Or
I would say that there are certain neighborhoods, whether it's been in South America, even in Korea, U.S., Mexico, that have raised the like the little hairs on the back of my neck that have raised up a little like spidey tingly sense. And for me, it's usually at night, but sometimes it's during the day. Like if things just get eerily quiet and see anybody around and then somebody's following you. I mean, it's like all about context. I read this joke the other day that someone was like, are 4 followers a lot? And they were like, on Instagram, no. On a street? Yes. So, it's just all about context. I mean, I remember when I hadn't been to South America before, I had only been to Costa Rica, which is like usually just like beach or beautiful jungle. And then I had been to Spain. And so when I went to Lima for the first time, I thought, it's maybe going to be like Costa Rica or it's going to be like Spain. And, I saw a lot more poverty than I was expecting. And, you know, being someone that's from a country that just, I don't know how to be comfortable with that environment. I don't know how to be comfortable with seeing like people just like laying around on the streets, especially when it's kids. When there's like rabid dogs running around. And then on top of that, you have people telling you, don't go over there. That's where all the prostitutes are, and don't go out by yourself because you're obviously, or you don't look Peruvian. And so you could be kidnapped. That puts a whole different like psychological spin on things. And I just remember being uncomfortable, but then also I was raised in a way to look at the glass half full. So whether it was like ignorance or overconfidence, I'm not sure, but a lot of the times I felt safe when I was with people that I knew in Peru, or, you know, when it was broad daylight. I guess it just like altered moment to moment.
Wow. Well, let's switch up a little bit and let's do some more crypto related questions. How about about that, Cade? You got some crypto stuff, Cade? I'll start then. You think of it, and I'll start.
I got another rapid fire question, then you do a crypto question.
All right, go ahead.
So a little bit more on the background of Lindsay. I know she likes Awkwafina, but I did a deep dive and found out that as a teenager, you're a big fan of Nelly Furtado. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. I was a big fan of Nelly Furtado. I'm not sure where I found that. But, yeah, that's one of my go-to songs. Oribang songs is Torn. Wait. Oh, Nelly Furtado. Sorry. Not Nelly Bruglia. Same era. Wrong lady. Okay, so I think my Nelly story, quick Nelly story, is that when I was 16, I really wanted Nelly the Rapper's CD. And my dad went to Barnes & Noble to buy me the CD for my birthday. And the guy that worked in the CD department was like, I wouldn't buy this. It had a big explicit sticker on the front of the album cover. And he's like, I wouldn't buy this for my 16-year-old daughter. And he was like, but, you know, it's alphabetized. He was like, why don't you, instead of giving Nelly the Rapper, why don't you give her Nelly Furtado for her birthday? And I remember I knew it was a CD, so I was so excited. And then I opened it and I was like, what?
That's funny. I actually have a similar story to that. When I was young, I went to Canada. I've got some cousins over there. I stayed there for 6 weeks. And, you know, in North America, rap music is a lot more popular than it is in the UK, especially from Yorkshire in the UK, where we've got bands like the Arctic Monkeys and stuff like that. So I ended up coming back with like Little Kim CDs and stuff like that when I was 12 and 13. And, I remember just coming back and being jet lagged and going to sleep and then waking up and like, where's my Little Kim CD? And my dad taking it. And he's like, you don't listen to this shit. And upon reflection, it was probably good parenting, you know.
Oh, yeah, man. Those explicit stickers and those album covers, those would get you into trouble. So that's what I found.
Sure. All right, a crypto question then. So we've been talking about gold and Bitcoin recently.
Oh, boy.
Now, would you say that Bitcoin is gold 2.0, or is, you know, is Bitcoin just the greater fool fallacy? What would you say? Or something else?
I mean, I do see Bitcoin as the current gold standard, but I don't necessarily believe, I got into debate with a crypto coin trader actually about this, is that I can easily see Bitcoin being replaced by something else. I just don't think that it, is necessarily going to be around forever. I mean, whether it's scalability, whether it's just, you know, fungibility, it's, I mean, as of today, though, I do think that it has elements that aren't easily topped by any one other cryptocurrency, but that doesn't mean that I'm not ready for another player to step in and went fully embrace. They could prove that they could top Bitcoin. But yes, as of today, I am a Bitcoin hodler, and I do believe strongly in Bitcoin. And as of today, but yeah. I'm happy to embrace a new cryptocurrency should that day present itself.
I think I have a view similar to Lindsay in that I like Bitcoin, but I think other cryptocurrencies competing is a good thing.
And people are going to go with the product that has the best usability, the cheapest fees. So Bitcoin has a lot of security. We've seen the hash power. But I just saw today that Bitcoin, BTC, is accepted at about 200 different stores online. Dogecoin is accepted at 600 stores. So if they don't figure out Lightning Network and stuff, most of the transaction volume now is on exchanges or person to person. So I think eventually, if it doesn't get adoption with businesses, it's going to go to Dash or Bitcoin Cash or Monero or something that hasn't even been invented yet.
Yeah, I agree with that, Kate. I'm just going to let you talk for another 2 minutes, you two together, because I have to plug in my battery. So I'm going to mute my mic and video, and I'll come back in a minute.
Mm-hmm. Okay, nice. Lindsay, you're in the crypto space now. You transitioned from something else. I think that gives you a well-rounded background. In the crypto space, what are you most excited about? Are you excited the most about cryptocurrencies? Are you, more excited about STOs or inventory tracking or putting data or documents on the blockchain or smart contracts? Like, is there any specific thing you're passionate about, or what are you excited about these days?
About the maturation in the space. I mean, when I first entered in summer 2017, I thought it was actually quite terrifying. Some of the immoral practices. I mean, it just didn't make any sense to me. And, you know, being someone that came from tech and I came from financial services, I felt like I should understand what was happening, but I just couldn't fathom how people would, invest millions and millions of dollars into a paper that they found published on the internet. Like, that was the only thing that I could, those were the only facts that I found, is that there were papers published on the internet that were gaining millions and millions of dollars. Why? I just could not create any logic out of that. So that, you know, that was summer 2017. Fast forward now to what I'm seeing come through Korea and the projects that I'm talking to, is that they're saying, we're not going to fundraise. We're not going to do an IEO, ICO, IFO, whatever the new acronym is. We are just going to meet investors. We're going to tell them about our working product that works, that has millions of users, and is, is going to set up corporate and strategic partnerships. So, you know, to me, that's like, you know, they're thinking about the long-term strategy. They're not rushing technology because they promised this exchange they were going to do an ICO on, you know, September 1st. Who knows why September 1st, which is a great date, but it's a memorable day, right? And so it's just like all these nonsensical things. Or like we have to, I mean, I've just seen like so many strange things that happened that didn't make any sense, like the way people set up their teams. The way people wrote their white papers, the way they set up their websites, it didn't necessarily have anything to do with the project or the technology or the long-term feasibility. And so now I feel like with the maturation of the space, is it's sensical. Like, I can grasp why projects are earning money or why they're not earning money. It just seems to have caught up with, logic. And I think that is going to open up the space for greater adoption and for us to really see things stick around longer and gain further popularity. Because yeah, once we get wider adoption, it's going to be great for everyone who's already in the space. So that's what I'm currently seeing as I see new projects come through Korea. And so I'm really, really happy about that.
Yeah, so a variety of, it doesn't really matter exactly what area, but just maturity in the space and getting investors in, looking at long-term growth versus just quick pump and dumps or ICO scams or pyramid schemes. Yeah, I think I think me and Josh would probably agree we're kind of seeing the same thing, and that's probably a good thing in the space.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that I can't wait for is just more like global usability. Since I've been traveling, I mean, Taipei to, I'm going to go to Canada. It's like, I mean, I was at the ATM the other day because in Korea, like, they're notorious for this. You pay in cash, they'll give you 10% discount. You pay in credit card, you know, they're going to do like a 10% upcharge. So you're like, okay, well, I need to get more cash, but how much cash am I going to withdraw? And then there's, you know, this huge percentage. I'm paying my US bank. I'm paying a fee to the Korean bank. I'm paying like tax. It's just like all these other considerations. Whereas like if I was just paying everything in crypto and crypto was accepted and it's on my phone and it just, yeah, I cannot wait for that day. And then I'm like, I mean, like, I'm thinking about, like, the currencies that I have in my desk, and they're, like, coins spilling out, and I'm like, how much is this worth? I don't know. What country is this from? If I can even read it, and so I'm just tired of that. And I hope that I don't have to use any fiat when I'm in Canada, because I don't want to go to the ATM And then inevitably I'm at the airport, like trying to figure out what like doodads I can buy with my last, like, you know, $5 to $50 left in my wallet. So,
yeah. Well, I think we're seeing a lot of growth in that space when it comes to different wallets where you can use 3, 4, 5 different cryptocurrencies. I recently saw that like Zeus app. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. They have a plugin where you can use Bitcoin Cash with Google Pay or Samsung Pay. So I think it's just going to take time and maturation and growth in the space. But I think inevitably it's going to happen sooner, you know, rather than later. It's just going to maybe mature more in Southeast Asia, South America first, and maybe Europe behind. And then if North America didn't change the rules, North America is going to be last at this point.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was called Moon app, the one where you can plug it in through a Chrome extension and pay with cryptocurrency on Amazon. Yeah, it's called paywithmoon.com. It's pretty cool. You can basically, as long as you've got a Coinbase account, you can pay with crypto on Amazon. So that's a really nice development, I think. I think we're going to see more and more adoption. Shameless plug, that's what, you know, Salamantex is trying to do. They're trying to bring payments to merchants and getting rid of volatility for merchants, because a lot of merchants, they don't really want to deal with the price swings that are, in, you know, inherently involved with cryptocurrency. So for Salamantex, they just want users to be able to pay with cryptocurrencies, but merchants to be able to receive fiat currencies. So it's good for their business model. That's what, you know, I think is a really good USP for mass adoption from Salamantex's end. Now, Lindsay, what do you think is some of the more innovative things that you've seen in the last few months coming in the crypto space?
Innovative? I'm not sure if I've seen anything in the last few months that has really blown my socks off. But I am excited to see more going on with peer-to-peer exchanges. I still think that that's big. And as those, I mean, in Korea, I think that's like what started like the real adoption here is exchanges. I think that they were the front mover and shaker. And so I'm seeing those open up a lot more in Vietnam right now. So I think in, you know, Southeast Asia, Vietnam seems to be leading the charge there. And then as these open up in other countries, it just seems to open up so many other gateways and so many other doors. Seeing more peer-to-peer exchanges, of course, in Latin America as well. We'll get on the peer-to-peer exchange. Yeah, it's just a gateway for so much more activity. So I just think, I mean, in Korea, certainly we've seen an overspill of exchanges, but that hasn't yet hit the rest of the global landscape. So I think that's cool.
Do you think that in terms of the Korean exchanges, that we are, you know, reaching a saturation point? Because I think we definitely have already reached that in South Korea. There are already some pretty big exchanges that dominate the market, but I keep on hearing new smaller exchanges coming up. Do you even think that they're necessary, these smaller exchanges, especially in Korea? Because I personally don't see there's any like market need for them. I think it's people getting in on a trend and a bit too late, actually. What do you think?
I guess I don't have a favorite. I don't have a favorite Korean exchange. And whenever I'm on a Korean exchange, there are things about the user interface that I don't like, or I think could be used differently. So I'm not, I don't want like 20 new exchanges, but I do think that they're still lacking in user interface. I think they're still lacking in maybe speed and customer service. And like, it doesn't seem to be as seamless as a service that I would want to use every day, right? Easily multiple times every day. So
yeah, that's true. I mean, when you compare it to Coinbase, which is really easy and intuitive, have you seen blockchain.com's new exchange called The Pit? That's pretty cool. That's really fast. That's nice. Binance obviously is pretty good user experience. I would say that the Korean exchanges have a bit to go when it comes to user experience. But if you're a Korean native, then you're kind of used to quirky user experiences on the internet. You know, if you've ever used any of the government services that require you to install loads and loads of random ActiveX plugins.
I don't think I can. No.
I just can't do it, right?
Silicon Valley. I just am not going to be, that's not going to be acceptable for me.
Yeah, I'm quite excited about the Bitcoin.com upcoming exchange, which is, I think, going to be launching early next month, nearly ready anytime soon. That's going to be pretty good. Yeah. I like the way that Bitcoin.com has really redesigned its website, and they've gone for usability. And I think it's really nice. I mean, I think it's quite a bullish sign for Bitcoin Cash, because despite it being Bitcoin.com, we all know that the guys behind that are the Bitcoin Cash guys. So I think that's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I was excited about that. You mean
their partnership with Smart Valor?
Oh, no. Smart Valor partnership was just an announcement that they made. But Bitcoin.com is going to launch its own exchange that will have Bitcoin Cash-based trading pairs. So I think that's a pretty bullish sign for Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah,
coming in the next few weeks.
I was excited about that too, but I don't think U.S. people are allowed to sign up. So I was a little bearish about that. But Josh, you can sign up for me and tell me how it is. I was pretty sad when I saw that.
Well, actually, yeah, as a foreigner living in Korea, I can't actually use the Korean exchanges for anything but crypto trading. I can't deposit fiat. I can't withdraw fiat. So that's a bit of a shame about that as well. So legislation is still an issue in the crypto space. Everyone's playing this game of, you know, go where it treats you best. And it's just about which jurisdiction is going to be the one that moves first and says, look, we're going to have some clear guidelines. Here's a framework that you can, if you want to do business in this country, in the crypto space, here's what you can do. I haven't seen anything completely clear from any government. People are just Malta. Going to... Well, there's Malta, that's very clear, but then Malta's also run by, you know, like essentially the mafia as well. So it's quite, you know, it's a bit of a dodgy place, even though it's in the EU. There's lots of still, you know, there's lots of assassinations and hit jobs that go on in Malta. And people have gone to Malta to do crypto, and that's a good thing, but not everyone has gone there. Some people have then moved on. So I heard that Binance went there, and then they moved to Jersey, and then Jersey, the country, well, it's actually like a UK overseas territory. It's nearer to France than it is to the UK. Not Jersey in the United States, not the Jersey Shore, not the situation, not that.
Okay.
So Binance Jersey opened up, and they opened the first fiat pairings that they can have on Binance with euros and pounds. So that's an interesting development. I don't know what's going to happen in the future in terms of legislation. We have a crystal ball. We did like a prediction show a couple of weeks ago. I thought that Bitcoin was going to go super high next year. I think I predicted about $80,000, $85,000, something like that. Do you have any price predictions for the coming year?
Yeah. High and low. I did. People got mad at me, but with my Korean friends and we were all sitting around, I had predicted that we were going to go back down to six before the end of the year, before the end of 2019.
Well, I picked six as a low as well, so we're in agreement there. Do you have a high?
Oh, no, I didn't pick a high.
Okay.
All right. I got a question for you guys.
I'm sitting on six as my low. No capped high.
All right.
All right. This was in the Korean press, and it was translated into the English press, but I'm curious if you guys have heard of this and what you thought about it. I heard about this in early August. The city of Seoul will create a cryptocurrency for citizen rewards, and they talk about how they plan to roll it out soon, and that they'll receive S-coins, Seoul coins, for use in public services. This could be paying taxes, participating in public opinion polls. They'll have like QR codes and it won't charge merchant commissions. You'll be able to submit qualifications without paper documents, which is notorious in Korea. Do you guys have any opinion on that or have you heard about it?
I've heard about it. I think it, you know, to be honest with you, you hear a lot of these announcements. In many cases, it is the politician of the day trying to make a move. Like, you know, I mean, Jeju speaking to the governor, he doesn't know anything about cryptocurrency, to be honest, very much. A lot of people in Korea were talking about him just doing it for political purposes so that he can kind of make a name for himself, which he was successful in doing. So I think that there's always an element of, you know, self-serving publicity at play here when it comes to announcements from the government, because the government in Korea hasn't made its mind up about what it's got to do. You've got two different departments that have two different opinions about what the status of cryptocurrency is. And then when you talk about Seoul Coin, it reminds me very much of a project that the former company I worked at, Glossopher, was doing, which is KnowOnCash. KnowOnCash was essentially a cryptocurrency based on a local area, a KnowOnGu in Seoul, which is I think it's in the northeast part of Seoul. Essentially, if you did voluntary work, then you would receive KnowOnCash, and then that could be used in select stores that had signed up for this program within that area, where you could get a discount of up to 10% on certain goods and services. So it reminds me of that, just on a grander scale, but to get it into all of Seoul is going to be quite a big ask, because you've got lots of different, I like to call them BPMs, like big power men, that have got their own agendas. And when it comes to politics, it takes a long time to get almost anything done. So I'm not too bullish on that being a reality. What are your thoughts, though, Lindsay? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll play devil's advocate a little bit. And when I read the book, I think it's called How Korea Got Its Cool. She's a time writer. She wrote this book, but it just talked about the whole Hallyu wave. And like when the Korean government decided this is going to be good for our economy, like, and they finally kind of got on that bandwagon, and how quickly everyone's just like followed in the line. I'm just going to use that as an example. It sounds like we're still kind of in this jostling period and people are kind of like going back and forth. But I think that once they line up, things are just going to fall into place like dominoes. But it just, the dominoes haven't been lined up, but it's just going to be, I think that it's going to be like the Hallyu wave. It's going to be like that. Once they line up, everything's going to fall in place, because it kind of just goes back to that Confucianism theory.
That's
like,
true.
People just don't want to be the one person to stand up and say no. And then Korea did amazing with their soft power and the Hallyu wave. So, yeah, just to play devil's advocate, I can see us getting things together rather quickly. And yeah. I hope we do.
Yeah, well, they don't want to be the one person to say no, but they also don't want to be the one person to say yes either.
Yeah, so it's going to take a lot more you know, let's say alignment of those dominoes before it can happen, I think. But once you, once they are all in a line and the first one, you know, topples over, I agree with you that it's going to be pretty quick. I just don't think that they're all aligned yet. So we're still in that jostling period, like you said, and that might take a little bit more time, because one thing is K-pop, you know, that is the Korean pop industry. You know, there was already J-pop before that. There's already a pop industry already established in the United States, whereas for Korea to basically stand quite strongly in terms of, right, we're going to be positive in terms of legislation, that's quite different, because they will probably wait until at least the United States has made it clear what they are going to do, I would say. It's very unlikely that Korea is going to be like, we're going to make this legislation all on our own without waiting for, you know, Uncle Sam's first move, because they've always got to be aware of what's going on in America, even if, you know, it might not be the most popular thing inside the country, but it's always going to be a factor.
Like the millions of dollars that, I don't know where BitMEX is based, if they're based in Malta, but okay, BitMEX, and then all the Chinese exchanges, like, you know, the, you know, that's Korea's neighbor, really. So if they have, you know, a reason to get their act together, I think China is a reckoning force.
All right, Lindsay, so if Seoul Coin hits the Korean exchanges, are you buying moon bags of S-Coin and hodling for the moon?
I'm going to follow whatever I'm legally inclined to be able to do.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Now, have you ever been involved in any projects that you would say are leading the way or have anything that's really new? So I don't know if you can disclose it or not, because you know, you're working in various capacities. But have you seen any innovation, not in the last 3 months, but over the last 2 years, you know, that you've been working in crypto that you really thought, you know, if they implement this, this could be a game changer? I want to get some inside info if you have anything that you thought, wow, that was really, really interesting. If this can only get adoption, this is going to be a really big game changer. Is there any game-changing technology that you've...
Sure, I'll throw out a few names because I talked to these projects at one point or another, but then we ended up just kind of going in separate directions. So I'll just do like rapid fire, but I think what Cody's doing at Tel Aviv is really interesting with their payments platform. That's COTI. I think what, let's see, who else do we have? Lithian out of, oh gosh, I think they're out of Germany. I don't think they're out of Austria. I think they're out of Germany. An energy, blockchain-based energy group. People have compared them to WePower, but they have a different technological setup, and they're partnered with SAP. So I think that it's going to be interesting to see how far they take off. There's another group called WOM Protocol, WOM, and they have created this protocol to be able to like be the interface between, I mean, it, to me, it sounds a little bit like what you're talking about with Salamantex, but I do think that they're going to focus more on, influencers, like retail influencers versus like all POS services. So like one of the things that they have is they have a partnership with Adidas. And then their dApp that they created on the WOM platform is called Yay. And so that accepts tokens. And then these, so people, let's say if it's Adidas, right? And they're going to be a big partner and they have these WOM tokens. If I want to create a profile on this dApp, then I can get paid. And I can also pay out any of my fans with that. So it's just, you know, one of this like social media empowerment dApps. But you know, I'm just excited to see. I think that, you know, out of those projects that I named, I think that they have good leadership teams. I've met with someone from their team face to face. And I've talked with their teams. So excited to see. I think that these all also had like long-term strategic visions and didn't make any, I didn't see them cutting any corners. So yeah, excited to see where those projects head in the next few months or couple years.
That's cool. And oh yeah, and we need to ask you this. Are you going to Consensus Singapore?
I still don't know for sure, because it's possible that I was going to help someone do some media coverage, not necessarily with CNBC, but a friend of mine. So I may or may not be in Consensus. Okay. If I'm not, I will definitely see you at Korea Blockchain Week, though. That will be my next for sure.
All right. Yeah, definitely. I'll see you at Korea Blockchain Week. I only just found out yesterday or the day before that I am going to be at Consensus. So if you do go, let's meet up and, you know, have a few drinks. That'd be cool.
Okay.
All right. Cool. You've done more than an hour, which is double the time with the VIP. So this is great. We're all VIPs today, so this is cool. So far, I mean, we've covered the origins of, you know, how you got into cryptocurrency, where you see the low for next year, some of the interesting technology that you've experienced. You've also talked about how you did some stuff with CNBC. So we've covered like a whole spectrum of things. Is there anything that we've forgotten that the audience should know?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that I'm really familiar with your audience. So that might be the first step is, you know, who's listening? Are these like crypto boobs?
Our audience is hardcore crypto fanatics that are probably experts in the space. And I looked at our analytics and it's like 100% men, but we're hoping to get some female listeners as well.
Oh, yeah, that's a good topic. So we talked about, you know, safety. You know, that's why you did the martial arts and stuff. But we didn't really talk about women in crypto really in any depth, apart from you being in crypto and you being a woman. So
I am a woman.
Yeah. So, I know. But
nailed it. Astute observation, Josh.
What I mean is, you know, women in crypto, when I was in the company that I was with before, we had like maybe half of the staff were women. But when you go to some of the conferences, it seems like most of the speakers are still, you know, still men. So what can we do to get more women into crypto? What do you think is what's the answer? What's the way to get more people involved in this technology, more women?
Yeah, I mean, I also worked in a Korean crypto company that had over 50 employees. And when I looked around the office, I would say it was a good mix, 50-50. But of those that were in leadership roles or would be traveling to conferences, or more like on the front versus the back end, more of the men were on the front end versus the back end. So I would say, yeah, I mean, that's maybe the first step is just having women in leadership roles. Would kind of tip the scale so that they're a part of the dialogue versus just, you know, sitting behind the desk somewhere in Seoul, Korea. But yeah, I think that like one of the first things that I saw when I started to get into this space is that I saw this group that Foo Styles started on Telegram, Women in Blockchain, has become one of the largest. And I think a lot of different projects have gone through there just to see what's going on. It's not a group of just women. There are a fair amount of men in that group, but it is supposed to be just like a safe area for people to talk about what's going on in the industry as a whole. And if there happens to be something of quality that a woman is leading, then yeah, they can promote that. If there's something that a man is doing that's of quality, they can promote that in that atmosphere. But it's also just to say like, hey, recognize that there's women in the blockchain space as well. You know, I don't know. I think that in the United States, crypto Twitter is a real force. Crypto Twitter is not very powerful, I think, in Asia, nor Europe, I would venture to say. I do think that there is some footholding in South America, but I've seen that that is very male dominated. And the females that I see on crypto Twitter may not have the most, let's say, refined backgrounds. So that's kind of an interesting thing, is like, if you're looking at the different geo, there's certain to be different areas. I also think that traders predominantly are male, so I don't know what comes first, really, like the chicken or the egg, or the cart before the horse, so to speak. But I've noticed that things, you know, like the starting ground seem to be male-dominated. And I guess I've always found myself in a male-dominated industry. Not really sure why or how far back I have to go to figure out, like, how other women could take that same path as me. Maybe they have to grow up in my family. I'm not sure, but what's the answer?
That's a good question. What comes first? You know, I always wonder what came first, the block or the chain? And so it's a good question. We'll never maybe know.
The Genesis block.
Oh, man. Block. I like that.
Genesis block.
I like that. Right.
This is cool. I'm glad that you've taken time to answer some of our questions, and I'm in Jeju, so I've got to get ready to rock for today's
show. Yeah, you got the shirt on. I mean, you're just like a beast over there. Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's raining though, right now, which is a real shame, because it was so beautiful up in Seoul yesterday. Apparently, I was speaking to Thomas from Crypto Crunch Capital yesterday, and he said Seoul was really good weather. So it's a shame that Jeju's just so dreary today. But we've got some tourist activities that I've got to do in the next 30 minutes or so. So I don't have any more stuff.
Nice.
I would love to ask you some more questions, but I didn't prepare enough for longer than 30 minutes.
No, we've done well over an hour. So, Lindsay, we'll leave you with the last word. Any closing comments? Any advice? Any...
Jump on the block, y'all.
All right. That is straight into the point. Okay. Until next week, we will see you on the dark side of the HODL moon.
Thank you for joining us on Dark Side of the HODL Moon. If you haven't already subscribed, please do so. Also, be sure to join our Telegram group, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and follow us on BitChute and YouTube, where you can find all the episodes as well as highlights from previous episodes. You can also visit us at darksideofthehodlmoon.com.
HODL Moon!